Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Watford on the road. Before that, we will have another segment of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. And as always, we have some very good topics for us to go through today. We do have a full show. Looks like both of my co-hosts are on the line. I'm going to bring them on. First, David, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Good to be back as always. Looking forward to it.
I am looking forward to this show as well, David. And it looks like Mike's on the line with us too. Mr. Gregg, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good, Russ. Looking forward to the show. Totally unprepared because I've only just got off a train, but I'm ready to go.
No worries, Mike. No worries, Mike. Again, I don't expect this to be too long of a show, somewhere between 60 to 90 minutes. We have several topics to go through. You know, again, like I said, we do have the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. But just to get you going, Mike, I haven't talked to you since the Fulham victory on Saturday. Just share with me your thoughts on what you watched at Craven Cottage. We talked about it yesterday on the post-match show, but I'm curious your view of it.
Well, it was a well-needed win, that's for sure. And certainly the team, every player on that pitch gave everything. And I'm sure you saw some of the tweets I was doing. You know, they were coming off battered and bruised and absolutely committed in every tackle. And there was some good football as well. And, you know, Derby is still a dangerous side. They probably never played to their full potential. But we have to take credit as well for how we harassed them. And Parker gave an absolutely 10 out of 10 man of the match performance. Total commitment, winning tackles. You know, I mean, that tackle on Hughes for the second goal, and there was, you know, good three or four other ones where he was getting in there. And we haven't seen enough of that from the team. You know, fully committed and everyone working for each other. And to be fair as well, I thought the crowd, who I've been critical of at times this season, you know, getting on the backs of the players, I think possibly because we didn't expect to get absolutely anything from the game, the fans were actually quite relaxed and were expecting a loss. And they saw straight from the kickoff, you know, we were straight in there playing the way we did for the whole game. It wasn't 100% perfect, but when you're on the kind of run we're on, we'll take anything. And, you know, we deserved the win in the end, and pleased for a number of players as well.
Listen, Mike, yeah, I'm glad that you put it this way. You know, again, you were there, and of course I'm now going to get David's view in 1 second, but I'm glad that you brought up the word commitment because, again, I've watched it now several times. My wife is making fun of me how often I've watched back this match because I've watched it probably 3 times now. And it's very interesting because, again, like you mentioned, from the minute the match began, you know, it was cagey. It was a cagey beginning of the match, but the commitment of all the players for Fulham Football Club was very noticeable throughout the entire match until the very end, and until the referee blew the whistle. They were going at it. You know, they were actually, believe it or not, looking for a third goal, which I thought was encouraging. But again, you know, I'm glad to hear that the mood wasn't so tight. You know, again, like you said, it probably had something to do with the fact that no one expected this. Except for the person you're talking to here. I did predict it. You know, I did predict it. But I had my reasons why, and I talked about it on the show. You know, again, I just knew, again, doing a little research, that Derby County were not the same team when Chris Martin wasn't playing. I had heard that from this podcast I listened to, and also from what I've been reading, you know, that again, it wasn't the same Derby team without him. And then, of course, Johnny Russell's another player that had hurt for him. He played half. But I had a feeling if both players weren't starting, maybe we could get something out of it. For me, it was almost like a perfect storm. Everything just aligned correctly, and the commitment from the team. It all worked in Fulham's favor there, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a Derby fan, like I say, I don't want to take anything away from Fulham. If I was a Derby fan, I'd be wondering if there were a few players there looking very nervous and a bit tense. And I wonder if, you know, having missed out last year, and I know they're top of the table, if I was them, I'd start worrying about getting a few jitters and, you know, seeing how the results go over the next few games. I still think they're the best side in the division,
so
and
do
they
I.
should go up. Yeah, and they should go up. But, yeah, a few of their players disappointed. But, again, I really don't want to take away from the commitment of the team.
I don't think we should, you know, and I don't think you are the way that you're putting that because, again, it's okay to say that they weren't at their best, but Fulham had a good amount to do with that because I thought we were at our best and played very well. It wasn't perfect, like you mentioned, Mike, but, again, it's, you know, it's the overall effort. It's the commitment, and that to me is the one thing that, again, when I watch back at it, seeing them close down players, seeing two or three players around a Derby County player, you know, who has the ball. I mean, that to me is what really stood out for me. Forget about the offensive play. I'm talking about being committed defensively and getting after them, and they certainly did. And that to me is what really stood out for me. All right, David, you and I really haven't touched. We've messaged back and forth, but I want to get your thoughts. You were there as well. Share me your thoughts on the Derby County victory.
Yeah, Mike brings up a very good point. I mean, I must admit, I had no expectations whatsoever. I was just sitting there literally waiting for Derby to score. I was waiting for Derby to kill us and to say, I told you so, you know, and you know, and it was a shock when we scored, really, you know, and it was almost disbelief. And then to go 2-0 as well, I'm still thinking, you know, especially after we were 2-0 up before against them, that,
yeah,
you know, sooner or later something's going to change. And yeah, I think Mike's right what he said, that there was the crowd didn't get on the back because we had no expectation. And, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it was much, much better than we've seen all season because we tried for both halves and we were good in both halves. And, you know, second half, we created chances to score. You know, McCormack and Dembele especially had good chances to score second half, which could have doubled it to 4-0.
Right.
And Derby didn't have one chance of the same caliber that we had. And that's testament
nope.
to the work rate of everyone. And everyone did something in, you know, one way or another. That no one slacked in the game. And, you know, I was a bit worried for Tony Cliff. I didn't think he started very well. Did a ridiculous tackle, and I think it was right in front of Mike as well.
I agree with you. Absolutely stupid.
I thought, my God, he's going to have to watch his step now. But I thought, you know, especially second half, he got better. And I think the LVC going off actually helped him because he switched to the right and maybe he felt a bit more comfortable there. So, you know, he finished the match quite strongly. Obviously, Parker was the standout one because he just, you know, people talk about him getting old and past it and everything else. But, you know, he put his body on the line. He put everything on the line. He was throwing himself into challenges. You know, the one he won, there was one he won before the first goal where he just sort of slid in, you know, and then obviously where he's dispossessed Will Hughes for the second one.
Yeah.
And he was like that all afternoon. He's putting his head in where it hurts, everything, you know. It was not he's been bad before, but he really was up for it, Parker. And that just seemed to spread to the rest of the team. And, you know, he led by example. And that's what, you know, that's all you can ask for the captain. The captain inspires the rest of the team. And they saw him do it, and they did the same. And it's the second ball. That's often the thing that where it gets you in football. It's not so much the first ball. It's being, you know, first to the second ball. And we weren't perfect, but it was pretty faultless. There weren't too many mistakes in there, really. Not too many bad mistakes. But Derby never got a look in. They never really got going. Saying that, you know, second half when it was 2-0, I thought if Derby were to nick a goal, you know, would we stay strong? That was my big fear. Would we crumble? Would we buckle as we have done before? But thankfully, it never came to it. You know, they just really never got a good look in. And so, full credit to the team. You know, I think to the team more than Kit in a way, because Kit just went out with the same team that he has done, and the dreaded diamond, and we thought, here we go again. You know, it hasn't worked against Derby before. They've worked us out. And it was surprising to see that it actually did work this time. And I don't know how. Saying that, we played a much wider diamond for a lot of the game because Tunick has played almost as a right midfielder and Kavanagh almost as a left midfielder, which meant we were slightly lighter in the middle. But, you know, Parker seemed to play like two men anyway. So, you know, and with everyone. So it was a wide diamond, I think. I don't know if you would agree with that, Mike. It was a wider diamond than we would probably normally play. But perhaps that kind of counteracted a little bit of our fears about being narrow, and it certainly worked for us anyway.
No, listen, it definitely worked, David. And, you know, again, I read the comments from Kidd after the match in the manager reaction. One thing that stands out for me, when he talks about the game plan, it was basically really to just get on top of them and not let them play. That's exactly what happened. And, you know, and again, maybe that is also a reason why you saw a wider diamond, like you mentioned. You know, again, the approach was different. The approach was, we're not going to let them play. We're going to get on top of them. We're not going to let them, you know, control the play. You know, even though they had more possession, you know, again, it just proves that it's not always about possession. It's what you do with it. And Fulham were very dangerous on the counter, as you guys were there. You saw that. But what's interesting, David, getting back to that second goal that everyone talks about with Scott Parker. Scott Parker was excellent. He dispossessed Will Hughes. He was going up the pitch very quickly. But what's interesting, and if you watch back at this, watch back even in the 2 minutes, you'll see it. Look to see how many players are streaking down with him, because it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just Ross McCormack. It was Sean Kavanagh next to him. It was also, believe it or not, Brian Ruiz along with Collie Woodrow. So there were plenty of options, you know, behind Scott Parker. They were all flying down with him. And like you mentioned, a very good point by you. He led by example, and that spread to all the players. So I see why, you know, you and many others, and including myself, I said he was man of the match as well, because it really was about his presence, and it spread throughout the team. But I'll also throw Ross McCormack in there as well, and yes, David, Brian Ruiz, because, you know, Brian Ruiz was definitely closing down and doing things I haven't seen in a while him do. You know, again, he was very aggressive in this game defensively, like you've mentioned, and I thought played a very good game. All right, let's move on. Before we go to the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, I just want to mention this and have a quick discussion about this. And Mike, I'm going to go to you, because Fulham are now in the table. You know, listen, last week we were still talking about relegation, and maybe we still should be, but I just want to put it in perspective. I want to get your thoughts on what I'm about to share. Fulham, again, 8 points away from Millwall. Millwall, again, right now they are struggling. They are third from the bottom. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read Millwall's matches coming up for the rest of the season. You tell me how many wins you think Millwall are going to get, because I'm just curious, because I was looking at this. I was trying to see what are the winnable matches for Millwall going forward. So I'm just going to give them to you and just share with me your thoughts, and then David, I'll get your thoughts on it as well. Because again, Fulham are still close enough to the relegation zone that we should be discussing this. So let's talk about Millwall. Middlesbrough away, Norwich, and I said Norwich. Norwich home. I did it, David. Bolton away, I probably did that too. Brighton at home, Brentford away, Charlton at home, Blackburn away, Watford at home, Wigan at home, that's a winnable match, Cardiff away, Derby at home, and they end the season Wolves away. So, again, they are 8 points away from Fulham. Fulham have winnable matches again. So I'm just curious, Mike, again, I'm just throwing this out there. How many winnable matches do you think Millwall have there? And Millwall, again, it's funny because I was just checking to see how many wins they've had for the season. They've had seven. They've had seven wins. So your thoughts on what I just shared, because, again, I want to put this in perspective of how much we should be worrying about relegation. How many wins do you think they could have out of their final 12 matches?
Well, I mean, it's difficult to say. No one expected us to win Saturday. So
right.
the division is tight in that sort of middle group, you know, from Blackburn down. I mean, we're 6 points behind Blackburn, who are 11th, and we're 8 points clear of Millwall. But I tend not to, you know, I'm a bit statistical, and I don't really look at teams. I look at historic data and who should be, what's going to be the points total at the end of the season. And then currently, you know, teams in relegation actually get more points in their last remaining sort of 10, 12 games than you would expect, because they're fighting
okay.
more for every game. So they're on 31 out of, you know, for 34 games. They've got 12 games left. I still
right.
expect them to be certainly, I expect that position, 22nd, to still be about 45 points,
okay.
46 points. It's a little bit less than what I probably thought a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Millwall are a poor side. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But they will pick up points from somewhere. And if it's not them, it'll be Wigan, who are 3 points behind them, because, you know, maybe they will get themselves sorted as well.
No, so that's a good point, too, because Wigan are only 3 points behind. Very good point.
Yeah, well, so we're, you know, that win has helped us a lot, because it could have been a point where we were looking at, you know, starting with the Millwall game, five games, people were looking at it and going, God, are we going to get a win? Are we going to get a point? So we've ended up with 4 points from three games. We've got a couple of games this week. We're above what we expected to have, in a way. So if we can pick up a point or three in the next couple of games, then I'll feel a lot more confident. But the job isn't done until you get the points. We've had a bad run. You know, we've had 12 games where we've picked up, what was it, eight points. So if we
win
the last 12 games with 8 points, we're going to end up with 47. So the work still needs to be done. I mean, I don't think we're going to go down at all, but you know, we still need to get the job done and push forward. And I believe we shouldn't really be worrying about the other teams. We've got to get the results ourselves, and Kit has to get the results, I believe. This run we've had. Have not confidence in him from the fans, certainly. I don't know about the board or anyone else, but he needs to finish the season well. So, Millwall, it's still going to be about 45, 46 points. They'll pick up points somewhere, or certainly Wigan will. And until we reach 50, I'm still sort of,
I hear you, Mike. That's why I wanted to bring up the subject. Because, again, I just happen to be looking at their fixtures coming up, the last 12 matches compared to Fulham's, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, where do we need to be? You know, again, I'm not throwing it out. I'm not saying it's 0%, but I just wanted just to put it into perspective. So you think 45 points is where you believe Millwall or Wigan will end up?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think Wigan are going to be the team who will get something from their win. I know they only beat Blackpool the other day, but, you know, Mackay, he's a decent manager. He should be getting better results from them. But, they beat Reading a couple of weeks ago as well. So, yeah, I wouldn't be looking at Millwall. I'd be looking at Wigan.
You'd be looking at Wigan. Very interesting. And it's funny because when I was going through it, I was thinking the same thing. And it's like, should I mention Wigan as well? They're only 3 points behind. But that's a very good point because they you know, again, they're more apt to jump ahead of them. So that's a very good point by you. I don't see Blackpool pulling themselves out of it, but it could actually be Wigan more likely than Millwall. David, what are your thoughts about what we're talking about here?
I think Mike is the expert. I misheard Mike at first. Oh, he said he was statistical. I thought he said he was sadistical, but
no, he's statistical.
He is probably sadistic with the statistics, though, Mike, because I know he's... I wouldn't dare argue about Mike with statistics, because I know he's a scholar of these things.
No, he's great. He's great with the stats.
I don't doubt him
when it comes to stats. Go ahead.
I mean, to predict in football is very difficult. The strange thing is, you know, Russ, in fact, that the top six are still the top six that we predicted quite a long time ago.
I know.
That alone, and obviously
that's
now
pretty good,
Norwich,
Dave,
are up there as well.
Norwich.
They've had a good run lately, haven't they?
They have.
You know, and for Norwich to do well, we need Rotherham to do badly as well, don't we, I suppose, really? Because that's another one down there. Sorry, we're not going to do silly impressions today, Russ. But,
yeah,
it was just,
that's okay.
It brought a smile to my face when we haven't mentioned Norwich for a while, so I suppose you've got out of it, haven't you? But,
I screwed up.
It's so hard when you look at these things because, as Mike says, you know, that teams down there are going to be really fighting. And, you know, certainly in the Premier League terms, there was always a team that has a late run together that look in danger and suddenly save themselves. And, you know, is that going to be Millwall? Is it going to be Wigan? You know, Blackpool, I think we can all probably agree that they're dead and buried, really. I don't think they're going to get out of that one. I think that's pretty safe to say. I would be surprised even if Wigan did, because they've still got a bit of a gap to make up, but it's not impossible for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, Millwall will be looking, obviously, the big game for them is their home game, you say, with Wigan, so that's the real six-pointer.
Right.
I think the loser of that game, if there is a loser, would probably be pretty much dead and buried, wouldn't they? It's going to be quite hard for them. So I think we can safely say two out of the three relegation places are taken from, you know, Blackpool and certainly one of the other two.
One of the other two.
So just really down, it's just down to them, and then obviously Rotherham, Brian, ourselves, and even upwards. But we're not that far away from what Mike has said is, you know, the safety margin. I mean, maybe only two wins away from a minimum safety margin, three wins perhaps, and you could say we are pretty safe. So for me, one, it's hard to predict what's going to happen with these other teams, but two, you've got to look at yourself first, and really, you know, and if we do what we need to do, then we don't need to be looking over our shoulder. And there's got to be three wins in there for Fulham somewhere. In the games we've got left, there must be three wins that, you know, they can eke out easily. If we can't win three games, then we should really be worried about our situation.
Well, David, listen, honestly, I totally agree with that. You know, and again, if you're looking at the matches, you're talking Blackpool away, you're talking Rotherham and Wigan at home. If you can't win those three matches, I'm talking about getting 9 points. If you can't get 9 points from that, then we got serious problems. The, you know, again, Blackpool might be tricky just because it's on the road. But beyond that, you know, again, we have to be looking at ourselves. You know, those three matches, you know, they should be winning all three of those, like you said. And there are other matches coming up. I mean, you know, again, Leeds is up and down. Leeds is going to be here, you know, at Craven Cottage. So there are matches coming up that Fulham should be able to get something from. And I'm not, you know, and I'm, you know, these next two matches, we're going to talk about Watford. Watford, I think, is a much hotter match than Bournemouth, even though I think Bournemouth is a slightly better side, partially because it's at home. But Watford, I think, matches up very well against Fulham, and they showed that in the last time. So again, we'll preview that match coming up. Before we do that, let's go into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. Now, I was just trying to think of some fun, interesting subjects for us to go through on this show, and I came up with these two. And, David, I'll start with you. Again, I put this on the Facebook page, and let's start with this one. Who has been the best striker you've seen wear a Fulham shirt all your years? You said 40-plus years. Who's been number one for you?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious choice, obviously, and that has to be Gordon Davis because of what he did over such a long period. I think it's hard to argue against him. Technically, you could say others were better, perhaps, or others were all round, because Gordon was quite small, but he was quick, he dribbled well, he ran at defenders well. He did actually score quite a lot with his head for someone who's only about 5'7". And he did it for so many seasons. He was top scorer. He was a 20-goal-a-season striker for many seasons. So I know none of those were at Premier League level, but nevertheless, he still did it. He still produced the goods. So it's going to be hard to argue against him. Otherwise, you know, where do you go with these things? We've had people who've come and go, you know, have great little spells with us, perhaps. You know, Zamora in one season was great, but I think overall you couldn't say he was the best striker. Berbatov was maybe the most technically gifted, but, you know, he had other bits to his game that people didn't like. So, I don't know. I can't really think beyond Gordon Davis on that one. They say we've had so many strikers, but no one else comes close to that, to his consistency in his goal scoring.
Okay, very good. And when I read some of the comments, obviously his name is going to be mentioned. Mike, how about you? It's been a long time, 40 years. You know, you've seen your share. So do you agree with David, or is there someone else that stands out to you?
Well, David's pretty much covered everything that I was going to say. I mean, I always think using the James Bond thing, I always think, you know, everyone's best James Bond is the first James Bond they see. So
Sean Connery.
Exactly. So in a way, the best striker you see is the one you see live, first of all, does well. Okay, so for me, it is Gordon Davis. He's the, you know, a best Fulham 11, Davis is going to be in there. Wasn't technically the best player, but, you know, record goal scorer, two spells. When you meet him, thoroughly nice gentleman as well. And, so for me, it's him. But we've had lots. Berbatov, agree with David, technically the best player. But you couldn't say he was the best striker Fulham's ever had. And then you go through Saha, who for me is second on my list. You know, there was a a thread on one of the websites the other day about attacking. When was the last time Fulham had a, you know, a potent attack, a real force? And you look at the promotion team of Saha and Hales and Boamorte. I mean, I put Barry in there as well. I mean, Barry Hales, again, not the most gifted, but, you know, in tandem with Saha and playing in that team, he was unstoppable sometimes. But for me, it's Davis, Saha, and a special mention for McBride.
Yep.
Probably didn't score as many goals as he should have done, but when he was captain, proper leader, and, you know, in a difficult time for the club, he certainly represented us well. So it would be, you know, those three or four players for me I would always be looking at as the main Fulham strikers.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you about a player that I've seen, you know, I'm going to read through the comments. Some have mentioned Alan Clark.
Yeah, that's before my time. Funny enough, if my old man was on the show, he would possibly say Clarkie. But that was before my time, so I'm not going to be able to comment on him at all.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. And that's why I said in your time, because everyone has their own time. Okay. All right. I'm going to go through. And there's one funny one, and I think you guys will understand that one is definitely sarcastic. But we'll start with Mark Hill. He says, Luis Saha, every day of the week. Harry Landemore, this is what I think is very sarcastic. Eddie Johnson, phenomenal goal scorer. Yeah, Eddie Johnson never scored for Fulham. I do know that, and I remember, and it was painful. Tamer Rahman, Brian McBride, Colm Bugler, Luis Saha, but I love watching Peter Beardsley for the short time we had him. Patrick Sullivan said recently, Saha and McBride going back, love watching Dean Coney and Ivor. Did I say that right, guys? Ivor, is it Ivor or Ivor? Am I saying that right?
Ivor, you got it right, Ivor.
Ivor, okay.
Ivor.
Alan Hammersley, Alan Clark, Jack Stanley, Luis Saha. Roger Lewis said Luis Saha, closely followed by Gordon Davis. Trucker Dave, Brian McBride, or maybe Saha. Tough one. So we got a lot of different ones. Kieran Solera said King Lewis. Ian Fox, Gordon Davis. Ibrahim Hussein, Gordon Davis. Ben Reed, for natural ability, it has to be Dimitar Berbatov, if only his effort and application matched his natural ability. Danny Heath said Ivor. Graham Gurr said Saha. Sanke Gorgo said Dimitar Berbatov. Tony Miles said Luis Saha. Alf Russell said Alan Clark. Roger Warren, Brian McBride, and Alan Clark. Let's see what else we've got here. Chris Cox said Bedford Jezzard and Luis Saha. Dean Pill said Gordon Davis. Okay, that's from the Fulham supporters. And David, what are your thoughts about some of the comments from the Fulham supporters?
Well, I must admit, actually, when I was just reeling him off, I completely forgot about Luis Saha, which is terrible. He would be a very close second, I think, as well, because obviously he showed he could do it even at the top level as well, which, unlike Davis, never had the chance with Fulham to do that. But
right.
Davis was here longer, and he is our record goal scorer, so I think he edges it. But there are others in there as well, and, you know, I was surprised no one mentioned even Rodney Marsh. He was a very gifted striker, though perhaps
right.
He played his best of his football away from here. When I was a boy, John Mitchell was all the rave, but I don't think he really kind of, apart from, you know, a spectacular goal in the semi-final of the Cup at Hillsborough. And then, of course, Teddy Maybank had a great little spell. I don't know if Mike remembers Teddy Maybank when he came from the other team in Fulham, I think it was, or from Brighton or somewhere. And, you know, I know the other team in Fulham were involved somewhere. But all these players had great little spells. I remember even having Phil Stant on loan from somewhere, and he was great. We signed Phil Stant, and we sold him because we were skint for about 40,000 quid. It was Ian Dowie we had on loan at one point, I remember that. But no, I mean, I think if you're an older supporter like myself, it's going to probably be Gordon Davis. If you started
right.
supporting, perhaps in more recent times, it would be Luis Saha in terms of their goal scoring. And with the other people mentioned, you know, like Berbatov for his ability.
Right.
Yeah, I'm surprised Bobby didn't get a mention because Bobby did so well in Europe. He was, you know, he was fantastic in Europe in that season. But again, it's consistency, someone who can do it, you know, season after season. And,
right.
And the only real people who did that was Louis Saha and Gordon Davis, I think. And Louis Saha was obviously cut short by the Man United thing, but no doubt he would have carried on doing what he did for Fulham had he stayed.
No, very good point, David. And I'm glad that you brought up some more, because I'm just going to ask Mike his thoughts about some more not being part of this. And like you said, it really is consistency. But, Mike, we've talked about this before with Zamora. Is this really about his first season? You know, again, fans are still angry about that first season that he played with Fulham, because, again, I was surprised that no one even brought up the name Zamora.
Well, I think it's also sort of goes back to the philosophy Roy had, where it was very much everyone knew their place in the team, and team being the optimum word. You know, I mean, Zamora did a job. He didn't have a great first season. He was a bit, you know, his attitude at times. I mean, it's that, all that has to come into play. I mean, he was important in, you know, in both those seasons, you know, seventh place and the European run. And there is a place for him on any sort of top 10 list, but I just don't think he makes it into the sort of top five, really, you know, given the baggage that comes with him. You know,
right.
Yes, he got the goals, but let's be honest, he wasn't the nicest character to be a fan of, really, you know. And there is a bit of sourness there, I think, in the fact that he's at the other club now. And, so, I mean, it all contributes to him not really being mentioned that often. I mean, he did a good job for us, absolutely no doubt. But, no, not for me, not in a list of all those other players.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to give you a name. You know, again, if you know baseball a little bit, a player that played for the Boston Red Sox by the name of Manny Ramirez. You know, he put up these great numbers for the Red Sox and was pivotal for them winning a championship. But, like you said, you know, had a reputation of Manny being Manny, and Bobby Zamora is a little bit like that. You know, again, Bobby Zamora, Bobby being Bobby, you know, again, not real warm and fuzzy in the relationship with the supporters. You know, again, I remember even when he was scoring the goals, you know, it was frosty. I could just tell it's frosty. And it goes back to that first season. And Mike, before we move on, I do want to mention this, because if I can remember correctly, I believe Roy even said back then that Zamora had a good year. It was just that he wasn't scoring the goals. Do you remember that? That first year?
Well, yeah, I remember the first year he couldn't hit a barn door, basically. But, I mean, he was involved in a lot of the goals. I mean, but we saw a player, we wanted a striker. You know, we've been crying out for somebody to score us, you know, 15, 20 goals. And he came in and, looking back, we probably gave him a bit of a rough time, the fans, and the fact that he wasn't actually scoring goals. But I think looking back, we can see now what Roy was doing with him holding the ball
right
up and laying it off. And, you know, since he left, you could argue, you know, we've never replaced him with that type of striker.
No.
We've tried other options, glorified midfielders up front, that type of stuff. But a proper man to hold the ball up and lay it off, we haven't had since him. And, yeah, he was. He probably deserves a bit more respect for that. Certainly that season where he didn't, I don't even think he reached double figures, but
I remember.
Yeah, he made up.
You know, and I again, the reason why I brought that up right now is because I'm just going back remembering. I could have sworn I heard an interview with Roy. Maybe it was quotes of him talking about how well Zamora played that season, and it really was the other things that he did, just not scoring the goals. And like you mentioned, Mike, you know. Fans, you know, like myself, also looking. You look at the goals when it's a striker, but he did do other things, like you said. We don't have that target man like Bobby Zamora. We you know, again, for me, I think we still miss Bobby Zamora. I feel like, you know, I liked what he offered. You know, again, he might not have been the fan favorite, but I liked what Bobby Zamora offered for him. All right, guys, let's move on and let's go to my second question here. And Mike, I'm going to start with you, because I got to be honest with you. I'm watching a good amount of these Europa League matches, and I'm reminiscing back to 5 years ago for Fulham. So I thought, again, let's go back there. Let's talk a little bit about it, because this week would have been, I guess you could say, the first leg of playing Juventus at Juventus. So let's talk about this. 5 years ago, what were your expectations, Mike, for Fulham with how far they could go in the Europa League after beating Shakhtar Donetsk and about to face Juventus? Because that would have been this week 5 years ago.
Right, okay. I'm trying to think back now. I mean, it's easy in retrospect to think, yeah, we all thought we were going to get to the final. But actually, and David might correct me here, I think we were just enjoying going along for the ride. We were loving the games. We were loving the European games at the cottage, you know, under the lights with the clappers and packed crowds. And maybe after beating Shakhtar, you know, it was a great win. There's no way we should have beaten this team after seeing them, you know, for that first 20 minutes at the cottage. But then you've got Juventus. And so I think it's more an anticipation, yes, you know, we're going to play one of the really big teams in European football. We haven't got a chance, but who knows what happens. And I think it was just, we were thoroughly enjoying it. And, you know, we started taking the knockout games a bit more seriously, or Roy did. You know, he started fielding stronger sides. And we started getting a little bit more press notice. You know, I have to say, you know, ITV4, I think it was at the time, were covering us, and they were doing a good job. And but it was, you know, no one expected us to beat Juventus, really. And, it was just really enjoying it, and, you know, looking forward to the Thursdays. And it annoys me now, you know, when teams moan about, oh, we're in the Europa Cup, we've got to play on a Thursday.
Oh, it drives me nuts, Mike. Good point by you for saying that.
Sunday. Yeah, I mean, you know, in European football, you have to apply to play in the tournament. You do it at the beginning of the season. If we qualify, we're applying to. If you don't want to do it, don't fill in the form. Don't sign it. Stop complaining about it. The fact, you know, and yes, it means games on Sundays, but it's no different to playing Wednesday to a Saturday. So I don't buy all that. So, yeah, not really much more to add to that. It was just we were enjoying it. Bring it on. Let's look forward to playing Juventus.
Okay, very good, very good. And, you know, again, part of the reasoning for me asking this is because I kind of wanted to go back there. You know, I want to keep going back there as the Europa League continues, just to have these memories. It's been 5 years, and they're special memories, and you guys got to see some special things. And, David, I'm going to go to you because, again, going into this match, I know my expectations were similar to Mike, where, you know, again, let's see how far we can go. But, you know, beating Shakhtar Donetsk, you know, and I thought they were a fantastic side. My expectations were, let's just, you know, who knows? It was more of a who knows situation. It did change after beating Juventus. But leading up to it, for me, is similar to Mike. It's like, well, let's see them play Juventus and see what happens. What were you thinking? Were you thinking similar, or did you think, you know what, maybe we can go a little bit farther. Maybe we can go all the way.
No, I was enjoying it just for the moment, I think, really, because you just, it's a point, you obviously only can take one game at a time because that's what you know. I mean, in fact, I think if I remember rightly, it was kind of two at a time, because when we came out of the group stage and they did the draws for the 32 and the 16 together, so we knew that we had Shakhtar Donetsk, and we knew if we beat Shakhtar Donetsk, I think, and Mike can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, I have a feeling it was either going to be Ajax or Juventus, something like that. I know certainly Juventus in there. We knew there was a chance of playing Juventus. And then after we'd played Juventus, then again it was the draw and we got Wolfsburg. Sure if we then knew we'd play Hamburg as well. We didn't know because obviously it depends on their result. But I think we knew, because we were in the other half of the draw to Liverpool as it came out, so we knew that we wouldn't face Liverpool till the final if that happened. But it was kind of a match at a time. In Juventus, you know, we were lucky that, in a way, because that goal by two, the deflection, to make it 3-1, gave us a little bit of a lifeline. But then, you know, at the cottage, of course, you know, it couldn't have started worse. It was just like this season, really, conceding an early goal.
Yep.
But you talked about, you used the term the perfect storm, I think, for the derby match, didn't you, with your with their injuries. And it was a bit of that the Juventus game, wasn't it? The perfect storm.
It was.
The guy got a red card when I don't think it was a red card. You know, Gira was kind of through and he was level with him, but Gira had no pace. Gira wasn't going to get to the goal. Someone would have closed him down.
Yeah.
A yellow card would have been the right decision. And I'm not trying to take anything away from it, but I thought a red card was harsh. But you're not going to obviously knock that back. And then, you know, as I mentioned on the previous show, you know, Juventus, they had Uncle Fester in goal, didn't they, if you remember?
They did.
They could have had Buffon. They could have had, I don't know who else was there at the time. I don't know who the second choice was, but Uncle Fester, he wasn't as good, obviously. And so, you know, that helped as well. And they were down to 10 men. And it was Cannavaro, whoever was playing for at the time, I can't remember now. And it just, everything just fell into place for that night, really. And I suppose being that goal down early on from Trezeguet, we had absolutely nothing to lose. We had just absolutely nothing to lose that night. And, you know, and it just, everything just went for us, really. You know, we got the penalty decisions, we got the red card in our favour. You know, they had their third-choice goalkeeper playing. And, you know, it was just a fantastic thing and for Fulham. And it was unbelievable from being maybe 3-1 down from the first leg and certainly 4-1 down after a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then I suppose after that was a thing. Maybe our perception did change after that. We just knocked out the holders, who were the favourites, and we knocked out the favourites as well in, you know, two matches running, and we didn't really need to fear anyone after that. We thought, well, we can do this. It would have been Fulhamish, obviously, then to go out the next round probably, but, you know, I guess after we'd knocked those two out, we did really start to believe that we could do something. And you know, Wolfsburg by comparison, I know we haven't got to that one yet, but by comparison, Wolfsburg, although they were the German champions, they weren't a patch on those two teams. That was the easiest match of the lot, really, in that, you know, in the knockout stage.
Right.
And obviously we got to Wolfsburg, and, you know, it was comfortable. Apart from giving away a last-minute goal, which was annoying, we made up for it by scoring a first-minute goal, and we were never in any danger in Germany away, really. If anything, we should have increased our lead. And at that point, you really did think, yes, we can go on here, and we've only got Hamburg to beat. And, of course, 0-0 away is perhaps not the best result to get, because you're always then fearful of the away goal. But, you know, we did what we had to do. We did it the hard way from a goal down. And, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, you know, good stuff. Good memories there, David. And listen, going back to that Juventus match at Craven Cottage, you know, just you mentioned the Trezeguet goal. You know, at that point, you know, you got nothing to lose, like you said. Then Bobby Zamora scored. Then you had Cannavaro being sent off for the red card. It was Cannavaro, by the way. Then after that, I'm going back in my memory. Second half, it was a cross by Damien Duff that brazed the arm of hand of Diego. That was a penalty. So again, all these things were going in our favor, like you mentioned. And of course, at the very end, you get the crazy chip by Dempsey. But it was, you know, again, that's a perfect storm match. Yeah, you're 100% right. Everything fell into place. It totally did. And it's a memorable moment, and that's why I wanted to go back there. I just wanted to get your mindset, the two of you, and also from the supporters, you know, what were you thinking, you know, leading up to it? Was it just, you know, listen, we're just happy to be here, my expectations are, you know, I really don't have expectations. So that's kind of why I brought that up, David, if that makes any sense. Because, again, you know, I guess I'm looking for reasons to talk about it, if you get where I'm going, because it was such a good time for the club.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially when we're having a bit of a poor season like now.
Right.
You know, it's wonderful to look back at the past and remember happy times. I suppose, you know, another way it can be sad, because you suddenly think to yourself, hold on a minute, 5 years ago we were beating some of the best team in Europe, and now look at us now. And I suppose it makes you more depressed in a way, but still, it was a wonderful, it's a wonderful season, and, you know, something will, you know, I'm sure I'll never forget, and everyone else who was involved with it, likewise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just going to read some of the commentary that I got there. We have four comments on this. Reese Curtis wrote, personally thought we'd lose to Juve and after the first leg, all hope was lost, but was so glad to be proven wrong. That European season cost me an arm and a leg, best memories of my life. Ben Hardwick wrote, didn't think we would beat Juve, and I thought we were lucky to beat Shakhtar as they massively outplayed us in both legs. Happy to have got out of the group. Was thinking to consolidate a top 10 without losing too much to injuries as our squad was small and massively stretched. Was thinking Roy would stay for a few more years and had dreams of Fulham progressing to a point where we could be a regular force in Europe. Matthew Pierce wrote, every round I thought we were done and we just kept going, magical. Liam Byrne wrote, I thought we'd go out to Juve, backed us to win the thing at 66-1 before the Basel match. It left me financially on my knees, but gave me so many great experiences. And that's, you know, again, that's part of the reasons why I wanted to bring that up, that we could look back, we could talk about it, especially with everything going on now. There were some good times for Fulham and some great times, and there's no reason why we can't talk about them. All right, guys, let's now talk about Watford. Let's get into this match tomorrow and just tell you a little bit about Watford. Watford is flying right now. There's no question about this. I'm not going to share anything that you guys probably don't already know. They're currently in fourth. They've won 19. They have 5 draws. They have 10 losses. They've scored 69 goals. They've only given up 42 for a goal differential of plus 27. They are on 62 points, and then they are not that far away from Derby County. Fulham currently 19th, 11 wins, 6 draws, 17 losses. We've scored 46 goals. We've given up 58 for minus 12 on 39 points. Now, this is what's very interesting about Watford. In the month of February, guys, they're 5-1. They only have 1 defeat. On Saturday, they beat Leeds United on the road 3-2. Their leading goal scorer is Odion Ighalo with 17 goals. He actually didn't play in this match, and speculation, again, it's a little fuzzy if he's going to feature in this match. They're playing this KG David, which tells me he'll end up playing because, again, they're not, you know, they're trying to keep this low-key that, you know, they're not showing their hand if Ighalo is going to play or not, because he did not play in the Leeds match because he is dealing with some form of injury. With 14 goals is Troy Deeney, who killed Fulham at the home match at Craven Cottage. And then there's Mattia Vitra, who I believe also scored against Fulham and has 10 goals, a very dangerous striker. They have several players that can hurt you. Abdi in midfield can hurt you as well. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. You know, it's funny because I was thinking about throughout this season the teams that I thought were the best that played Fulham. I thought Derby County was number one. I actually thought Watford was number two.
I think I tried to forget about it, but the game they played in the college, just, you know, all over us really. And the thing about Watford is they started the season really well and were, you know, first and second. You know, for a little while, and then they had a little bit of a dip, and they sort of bobbed along in sixth place for a while. But certainly the last 10 games or so, they, you know, been one of, you know, along with Norwich, the best two sides in the division. So they've got themselves back on track, winning games at an important part. But there's probably one thing, if you want a stat, they're the best team against the bottom half of the division. So they do the job, you know. If you're going to go up, beat the teams at the bottom of the division, and that's what they have been doing this year. They by far the best team against the lower clubs. So
they take care of business, Mike.
They do. They struggle a little bit against the, you know, not all the time, but certainly against their opponents in that top eight, you know, they do struggle a little bit, and that's where they fall down. But they're going to be looking at playing us and thinking, you know, that's 3 points for us. And they've done a lot better than I actually thought they would do. I mean, I expected them to be there or thereabouts, but they've been pretty consistent since Christmas. And you know, they win games; they're not drawing them. You know, that's the difference. You know, they win 3 or 4 on a trot and then lose one, but then they get a win straight back. And that's what you need to do at this level. Draws are not enough. So
right.
You've got to say, sort of form-wise, that, you know, those 4 or 5 clubs at the top of the division, Watford are Watford are one of those who are probably going to be looking and thinking, you know, we can consolidate our place in this top three and get into one of those top two positions, because, you know, none of them are really trying to run away with it. Bournemouth have slacked off recently. We obviously beat Derby the other day. So, tough game. It's going to be a tough game tomorrow, and they've got some attacking options as well. Where,
absolutely.
You know, they're scoring lots of goals. I mean, what is it that you said about February? I mean, I'm looking at their results, you know, 3-2, 3-0.
5-1. Okay, they're 5-1.
Yeah.
Think about that.
You know, they lost to Norwich 3-0, which...
They did.
Know, like I said, you know, against the teams who are doing well, that they've struggled there, but Norwich are beating everyone. You know, and again, 4-3, Bolton, 2-1, Brentford. It's going to be tough to keep them out tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I was talking to Emilio offline, and we're talking about this match, and he said out of the matches coming up, he thought this was the most difficult one because Watford is, you know, again, a quality side, and I think it's a tough matchup for Fulham, especially the way that we were set up to play them last time. They just they're all over us, Mike, and that's why, you know, again, this is going to be a little bit of a test to Kip, because I'm curious to see how he's going to set Fulham up after seeing how they played against us at the Cottage. Will he make changes? Will he change his philosophy in this match? I'm just throwing it out there because again, they were just, I just remember this. Fulham had no chance from the get-go. Forget about the sending off. I didn't think they were going to win in the first 10 minutes, you know, because this team was that dominant. They're all over us, and that's what scares me about this match. David, what are your thoughts about Watford?
Yeah, I think this is a bigger banana skin than Derby, really, now, when you think about it, because can we go out and do the same thing again? I'm not sure. I think how many people would say that we can raise our game like that? You know, now it's the other way around a bit. Maybe Derby were complacent, thinking it's going to be too easy. Now Fulham perhaps may be a bit complacent and think, hold on a minute, we can do that again, and could get caught cold. I mean, we were probably a bit complacent against Watford at home in a way, because Watford were in a bad run when they came to the Cottage. And perhaps the players thought, yes, we can turn them over. And, you know, how wrong can you be? And so now, of course, we've got a good result, but there's going to be team changes tomorrow night for sure, or at least one anyway. Can they do what they did? And I don't know. It's going to be hard because, as you say, they've got those three powerful players, Watford among others. I did tweet it today that Watford apparently got Zat Knight on trial. And I sent a tweet to them saying, please sign him and play him tomorrow night. Please, please, because that would be a perfect storm as well. If only Zat Knight was at Fulham now, Brian Ruiz would never get mentioned. But I'm not, that's all I'm saying on that one. But no, I mean, yes, they're going to be difficult. And I think going away, we're going to be obviously, you know, quite drained after that effort we put in. I'm not saying Watford won't be, because they played on Saturday, but the effort we put in, you'd think they'd be drained. There's going to be knocks and bruises and whatever, a few anyway. And I think it's going to be very hard to get anything out of that. So we're going to have to sort of try and replicate what we did against Derby, but will that be enough? I don't know.
Yeah. Listen, it's going to be tough, David. I mean, you know, I looked at this match, and I, you know, and even going back, watching some of the highlights from Watford, and it's the exact same team we saw at Craven Cottage. It's not anything different. You know, again, they're doing the same things. They can hurt you in many different ways. You know, again, they have many attacking options. It's not just one person you can key on. There are several, and I think I've named them. It'll be interesting to see what is going to be Kit's approach in this match, because I don't know how he's going to approach this. I hope maybe he learns something from that loss and maybe tries something a little bit different. I don't know what the game plan is going to be, but it'll be interesting to see. David, before you need to drop off, why don't we talk a little bit about the ref? Have you had a chance to check out about the referee? Didn't we talk about that this was the match with a very bad referee?
Yeah, this one is the Trevor Kettle, who's supposedly the worst ref in the Football League. He's certainly one of the most controversial ones anyway. If you only have to Google Trevor Kettle, and I think you'll find tons on him. You know, he's I think he's you know, it's all sorts of things are questioned, really. It's not just about his ability to ref a match. It's also his, you know, he's dishing out cards. I think he can go a bit lunatic with his cards sometimes as well. I mean, saying that, obviously, I, you know, I said to beware of Mike Jones on Saturday. I don't think he had a brilliant game, but I don't think he did anything terribly wrong. I don't know when you watched it, what you thought about it. I know you didn't get a chance to rate him yesterday to discuss it, but I thought he did all right. But it's just with him, he doesn't instill much confidence with me. He just kind of sort of ambles along, and a few of the decisions don't seem to be, you know, he doesn't look like he's in control, really, I think, you know.
That's a good point, David. Yeah.
Mike Jones, he's got the impression he's not one of these demonstrative refs, and he just seems to, I don't know, the game just seems to pass him by, but Trevor Kettle, certainly, he's quite a controversial and, you know, notorious figure in this, and I can see there's a Facebook group, Trevor Kettle not fit to referee, but we've never had him at Fulham. I've seen him for years on my referee boards. In all the years we're in the Premier League, every week I see people spouting off about him and being card happy or terrible decisions and stuff, and but we've never actually seen him, so tomorrow... God knows what it's going to be like. I mean, Nick, that could be a
boy.
Private
okay.
Store,
well,
you know, he might go loony. He might go loony
boy.
With Watford, and, you know, it might help us. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? Well, thank you for the heads up, my friend. That's why I like the fact that we could talk about the ref, because as we've seen, David, sometimes the ref does matter. I'm talking about the makes themselves a part of the match more than I would like. But, you know, again, that's why I'm glad that that you do your homework and you share your thoughts on the ref, and this is one to look out for. All right, David's going to dial back in, and while we do that, Mike, I'm going to go to you. Let's really get into this. And you know what? This is, like I said, this is a difficult one, Mike, so I'm just going to ask you flat out, what the Fulham need to do to win this match?
They need to replicate Saturday's performance, or certainly the commitment. And pretty much the same game plan, really. Get right.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Would it be a similar approach?
I think it has to be. I think, you know, we've whether you think we've played well, like Kit has said, or and been unlucky or not, Saturday worked because we were right on top of them. We were fighting for every ball. We were throwing ourselves, you know, in front of shots and getting tackles in, and you know, everything that was opposite to the Wolves game, which I watched on replay, and what people have said. So we cannot go into tomorrow's game reverting back to the way we have been. We found a, whatever you call it, we found a formula on Saturday which we need to take into the next game. And I think it's important that we do, because you can't, you know, you can't sort of say, oh, we've got 3 points and now just revert back to the way we've been playing and not getting results. We've got to get another result against a team that's flying. And the only way we can do it, given the players we have, is do exactly what we did Saturday. So I would expect whoever comes in, whatever lineup we put out, that they have to do the same. If they start poncing around again and then just backing off, then it's just not going to work. And we're going to get steamrolled. We're going to get steamrolled again. And, you know, hopefully a few more fans from Fulham will turn up tomorrow to support them, because I know ticket sales haven't been great. But you can't really blame fans a lot, considering how poor we've been recently on the road, even if it is a local game as such. But, yes, it just has to be the same, Russ. We just need to fight for every ball and commit and support and make runs as well, not be... Like you said earlier, you know, we were attacking, you can see it, and suddenly we had bodies on the pitch. Interesting thing is, I would say, if people look back at, say, the first 20 minutes on Saturday, you'll see a difference between two teams. You know, Derby were dangerous going forward, and you watch how many people, they literally would just have their two centre-backs on the halfway line, and the other eight players were all within 30 yards of the goal. You know, I mean, they stretched wide. But they had numbers in attack, whereas when we usually attack, you know, we might have the ball, Ruiz might have the ball, or, you know, one of the wider players might have, but all we have in the box or nearby are two players. And we changed that a little bit when you watch us from Saturday. We had a few more numbers, not that many, but we had, you know, that extra midfielder, if you like, just supporting the strikers. And so we had three options instead of two. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to try and take the initiative again and from the kickoff. And we've said it loads of times, haven't we? You know, what do we need to do? How do we need to start tomorrow? We need to start like we did the other day and be right on them from the kickoff.
You know what? I tend to agree with you because I remember when we played played them earlier that again, we let them play. And similar to Derby County, when we let them play, they basically just took it to us. So, again, the philosophy, I actually agree with that, Mike. That's why I'm asking a question. Should the game plan be the same thing? Don't let them play. Be in their face just like you were against Derby County and take your chances that way. And I tend to agree with that because, again, if I can remember, I mean, they had some great passing. And, you know, and they opened us up really fairly easy. And we cannot allow them space, like you're mentioning, Mike. We need to be on top of them just like we were against Derby County. David, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with me, Mike and myself on that the approach should be similar to Derby County?
Well, they've got to try and replicate what they did against Derby, obviously, because if we go back to how we were playing narrow, just sitting back, trying to take pressure, you know, not playing with any pace or passion or energy, then we will get steamrolled, no doubt. Now, you know, it's going to be very interesting because Watford, you know, will be thinking, well, can we do this to them? Can we start like we did last time? Can we go out and steamroller them? You know, like they did at the Cottage. Will they be complacent? Or will they think, hold on a minute, you know, look what they did to Derby. We better be careful here. Will that make it a more cagey affair? I don't know. I think Watford will try and go for the juggler from the start. So we need to be on our toes from the start. But we need to play with that pace and that passion and that grit that we had. But I don't know, can we do it two games running? We couldn't even do it two halves running until Saturday. That's the trouble. Remember that? We couldn't do two halves running. So that was our first time. To do it two games running, I don't know. But that's what we need to do anyway. We're going to have to be at our best. We're going to have to be at our best again. And, you know, the system, although, you know, the system is probably second place to how we play.
Right.
But I think we do need to play all across the park. We need to be strong in all areas. It's not about being strong in the middle with a diamond or being strong on the wings. I think we need to be strong in all areas. So, and as I say, play with pace and passion. And that was completely evident on Saturday, completely evident compared to how it was. And I say, you know, I think I heard you talk about at some point, in a way, you could argue we were more like an away team, that we got them on the break. But then that's just kind of perhaps the way that Derby would play, where they would come at you anyway, whereas at the Cottage, maybe some away teams would sit and wait, you know, to catch you on the break.
Right.
And Derby had to go forward because they were losing the game, so it gave us an opportunity to catch them on the break. So that was probably more akin to the way the match panned out than to deliberate tactics by Fulham. But nevertheless, it was good to see us actually, you know, play in that way, I suppose, where we did play with a bit more pace. And that was probably by, you know, the balance of the players we had out there, because it just seemed to work a bit better. Corley, you know, we haven't mentioned him yet, but I thought
David, I was just about to mention Corley. I mentioned him in the last show because, you know, if you go on the Fulham Football Club website, that, you know, again, there's an interview from him, and he talks about how, you know, the approach of that match and how he had to play that way as well, David. He had to play that way.
That's right. Well, all I ever get in my ear is how wonderful Ruiz is and how awful Corley is normally. And but you know, no one could fault Corley on Saturday, really, I think. And you know, even my oldest, he wasn't actually there, but he watched it. And you know, no one could fault Corley. Corley was tricky. He was quite strong with the ball. You know, he for quite a big guy, he got around quick and he was running at them. And for me, he caused, you know, much, much more problems than Hugo's been causing of late. And I think he linked pretty well, and he did hold the ball up well. And that helped bring other people into play. Hugo doesn't tend to hold the ball up as well as that. And you know, Corley played with a lot more energy as well. So, you know, I think it's full credit to him. He was one of my stars of the match. I mean, you know, apart from obviously Parker, he stood out for me, Corley there. As
well,
he
played
as,
great,
you know,
David. Yeah.
As well as, you know, I mean, Stafelidis and Bodroff at the back especially. And that sort of thing, again, we're going to need. I mean, who knows what Kit's going to do. He might throw a curveball and change the team around and say, well, we've got a match on Friday. And I hope not, because he rested, you know, he rested Parker for Wolves, and I'm not sure about Parker yet, but, and I had Wolves fans telling me, and, you know, you're mad, you know, Parker ran the show when we won in the cup replay there, and I couldn't believe they rested Parker. And when
yeah.
you see what he was like on Saturday, you know, that's how valuable he is. We, you know, Mike and I were at Sunderland, and we saw Tunnicliffe have a good game in that role. But even on that day, compared to what Parker was like on Saturday, there isn't really a comparison, I don't think. And if Parker can turn in captain's performances like that, then he has to play every game, whether he's fit or not, really. You know,
I don't know,
do
David.
That.
12 more matches left. Can that guy finish out all 12 matches? I don't know. That's a
well,
lot.
You know, at least start them anyway, so that we start the match. And you know,
yeah.
now you have Hoogland, you know, back on the scene.
You
and,
could
you
play
know,
Hoogland. You could have Hoogland help him out. You know, again. Maybe, you know, help him out in that role, maybe a match or two. I know he's not Parker. I know this, but I'm just saying, I think that he could play that role if you have to.
And we have Tunnicliffe, who can kind of play that role as well.
He can play that
and,
role too, yeah.
And, when, you know, Kavanagh's back now to offer something else there. And, of course, Fofana, who wasn't used Saturday, is around.
That's right, we're forgetting about Seiko Fofana. So again, Kit does have some options to play around tomorrow, but again, between me and you and Mike, I'm just hoping that Scott Parker does play, because we see what he can do when he's at his game, and he was at his game on Saturday. There's no question about that. All right, guys, let's move on. And, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. I've been asking this lately in several of our shows. Who has to have this exceptional match, the key player of this match? Would it be Scott Parker? But if Scott Parker doesn't play, who would be your key player? Mike, I'm curious.
Well, I mean, I said on the Friday preview game for Derby that it had to be Kit, didn't I? So, you know, he had to.
You did.
And somehow he got that going. And usually it's either been Parker or McCormick. It's got to be the player. I mean, going back to, I mean, what about this? We've got, you know, he obviously rested Parker last week. Maybe he saw Derby as a better game for him to play in. And I wonder, given the amount of effort some of those players put in the other day, I mean, Parker went off limping, Bodroff finished the game on one leg, you know, he was almost subbed. They were battered and bruised. And I wonder, looking at these two games, whether the temptation will be, well, you've got two choices. You try and stick as close as you can to the team from the other day, you know, LBC won't be playing, but
right.
You could pretty much argue pick the 11 that was playing in that middle of the second half, if you like. And or do you target Friday? Do you say, you know, Parker's not 100%, he gave all his all the other day, let's rest him, Hoogland's back, let's get him in for a game, let's get Fofana in, and let's target Friday, because they're not on the greatest form either. So it's an interesting one. I'm probably going to say Bettinelli, really.
Okay.
He wasn't that busy the other day. You know, he's got over that little wobble he had over a couple of games. But I think he's going to be busy tomorrow. So he's going to have to be right on it from the start as well.
Oh,
and
that's actually a very good pick there, Mike.
Yeah, he needs to calm down again. He seems to getting a bit frustrated, kicking the ball long, but you know, away from home tomorrow on a busy night, yeah, just stay calm and control that defence. But for me, Bettinelli.
Let me ask you this: I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I can't imagine he would include him. But do you think we might see Matt Smith in one of these two next matches?
I think you might see him on the bench, possibly Friday, but I wouldn't be that shocked if he wasn't in either 18.
Okay.
I'm not convinced
okay.
Kit's a fan of him. That's the reason why.
Yeah, no, that that's true. But I, you know, again, I was just trying to think of outside the box. Would he even consider Matt Smith? I wouldn't think Matt Smith would be included tomorrow, but I would think maybe against Bournemouth. But
I think it's all just down to injuries, Russ. I mean, he had he only had Dembele on the bench, if you like, attacking wise, because Roberts seems to have dropped out of favour now. And if Hugo's, it looks like Hugo's going to be fit by the sounds of it. So and I wouldn't. No, I don't think Dembele deserves to be dropped out of the 18 after his little cameo the other day. So possibly Friday, maybe, but you know, I wouldn't put any money on it.
Okay, fair enough. David, who's your key player in this match?
You know, I agree with Mike. The Matt Smith situation really is that, you know, we talked about it on Friday, that Kit's comments, he did literally, you know, almost show that he wasn't too keen on Dan Burn and Matt Smith, and obviously he had the chance to get Matt Smith back, I think sooner, and they chose not to, even though, you know, we're going through a funny spell. So yeah, you're right. Maybe he's not that keen, so maybe we won't see Matt Smith that much tomorrow. I mean, you know, you'd have to say if he's fit, it would be Parker again, because if he can replicate something like he did on Saturday, then we have half a chance. But otherwise, it's hard to pick, and maybe, you know, maybe it's the sort of game where you need someone like Ross McCormack to pull the strings. Or even, dare I say, Brian Ruiz, because...
Excuse me?
Typically away from home, he's very, you know, he's usually pretty poor away from home. The way matches don't seem to suit him, because,
okay,
you know, when you play away from home, perhaps you tend to play more compact, less expansive, and you know, it doesn't suit his game. His game is more suited when you're playing with pace and when you're running at people, when there's space. So I'm not sure if an away game against a difficult team are going to close you down is going to be his one. But you know, if Brian Ruiz could turn out a master performance, and he hasn't done two, you know, talk about having two good halves, two good games on the trot. I don't think he's ever had two good games on the trot either. So, you know, perhaps that's the key. Brian Ruiz and Fulham to have two good games on the trot, and then maybe that will be the key to winning.
Okay. Wow, David's mentioning Brian Ruiz. I'm proud of you, David. Mentioning Brian Ruiz. Wow. I'm talking about in kind of a challenge positive light. You know, you're like, hey, you know, if you know, let's see if Brian Ruiz can do it. Very interesting. I like that, David. All right back to you. Let's go to your starting 11. This is your starting 11 and your formation. We know how you feel about the diamond right now. So give me your formation and your starting 11, as I just repeated myself twice.
That's okay. Well, I'm going to hope everybody is fit, bar obviously LVC, because we know that he wouldn't be fit. And so I would play with basically that team that... that we finish, well, not so we finish with, but the, as Mike said, the sort of the middle part of the game team. So it would be...
So with Sean Cavanaugh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Bettinelli in goal. I think Richards, although I want to see Hoogland back, I think Richards did it, you know, it would be harsh to drop him, as it would be Hutchinson, Bodiroff or Stafelidis either. They all played their part. So I'd play a wide, it would have to be, I suppose, that wide diamond more, really. You know, with Tunnicliffe would be playing literally right midfield and Kavanagh left, with Parker holding, and dare I say Brian Ruiz there at the top, and Corley and McCormack up front. So,
okay,
you know, I'm despite, you know, favouritisms or non-favouritisms, you don't change your winning team. You know, that's the number one rule, I would have thought. A team that's gone out and played a good performance, if they're fit to play, play them.
You're playing.
And, you know, yeah, sure, they got another match on Friday, but you know, you never know when you can win. No one would have predicted we would have beat Derby. We could have just said, oh, well, we might as well rest, you know, rest our players against Derby for the Watford game, because Watford's going to be even harder. We're going to get beaten by Derby, let's rest them. We can't say that. So we did it against Derby. You know, let's see if we can catch Watford out. So if they're fit to play, play them. If they're not, obviously, then it's going to be, you know, people like Hoogland for Parker, perhaps. Or Tunnicliffe to play there, and Fofana to come into the midfield. I say no. Corley hasn't had much game time, so I would say keep him in at all costs. You know, he did really well. McCormack, you're going to always want him in there. Kavanagh, certainly, I think he's entitled to come in for a start because, you know, he's he hasn't had much game time recently, and he played, you know, a good part of the game. I think he's, he must be up to playing, you know, to starting now. And, you know, he was, you know, he's quite a useful player. He used the ball very well, really. He didn't try anything too outrageous, but, you know, he was there linking in, and he offered a lot of support, obviously, for staff leaders, which is something we've been lacking a bit. And likewise, Tunnicliffe was offering support for Richards as well. And although we were playing with only sort of Scott Park and Ruiz in the middle because of the fact that McCormack dips back here and there, you know, and then Ruiz has more space, you see, and that's what he likes. So it kind of works for us, the wider diamond, as long as we don't get overrun in centre midfield. But if Parker can go out and do that and play like two men, you know, like he did, then, you know, that it works. So, yeah, keep the same team if they're fit.
Okay, if they're fit. That's the caveat, if they're fit. And I understand that. And, oh, by the way, David, someone did predict Fulham to win, but we know who that is. Over to you, Mike. And give me your formation and your starting 11. Is it any different than David's?
No, it's not a different lineup. It would be a slightly different formation. But
okay.
Yeah, I mean, if everyone's fit, then I can't see how he can't pick that 11 that started the second half, really, or sort of in the middle of the game when Tavernier came on. But I think, you know, what I said earlier about, do you look at these two games and sort of say, well, at home on Friday, should I, if Parker's not 100%, would it be better to have him for a full 90 on Friday, you know, instead of maybe an hour tomorrow and, you know, see if he's okay for the end of the week? Also Bodroff as well. So is it, you know, this is fourth game in 11 days tomorrow. You know, those players are going to be aching. And I would almost be tempted to make changes. But obviously, you know, winning team, that type of stuff. So same 11, but being an away game, I would slightly drop McCormack back. So I would have, obviously, the four at the back, then Tunnicliffe, Parker and Kavanagh. And then I'd have Ruiz and McCormack sort of floating around so that they can go wide if need be, if we're being attacked down the wings a lot, and
okay,
leave Woodrow up top on his own. But, if it was me, I'd actually, you know, are you fit? If not, let's bring the other players in. They know the commitment needed. But so I wouldn't be too upset if there were a few changes and players getting other games. But, I pretty much, you know, let's all expect it to be the same 11 if they're fit.
Okay, and you know what? I'm with both of you on that. Here's my one thought, and Mike, you tell me if I'm going to be right here, or you think I might be right. I think he might play Hugo, and I would rather see if he's fit, because again, I saw some quotes about the fact that he might be fit to play. If you're asking me, I would play Colley Woodrow. I think it would be harsh not to play Colley Woodrow. But I got a funny feeling, Mike, that he's going to play Hugo. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think he might play Hugo in this game?
He obviously likes Hugo, and I'm a fan of Hugo as well. But I have said before, you know, he's been off form and he should be dropped. I mean, I'm a little bit annoyed at sort of the backlash Hugo's got from not playing the other day. You know, everyone going, oh, Woodrow should have been, you know. Woodrow's had a few starts, and, you know, people are in danger in the low X of stands of getting, you know, the ball hit with some of his shots. So he took his chance on Saturday, and I'm a
okay.
big fan of Woodrow, but, you know, he did well. He should start tomorrow, and if Kit does drop Woodrow, there will be a backlash, there's no doubt. He played well, he won he's got the shirt, he should keep it. Now, whether Hugo and Woodrow start, and maybe McCormack gets the rest, that's another subject, but I would be disappointed if Hugo came in for Woodrow. That, I think that would be a big mistake.
Okay.
A PR mistake almost for Kit.
Yeah, and, you know, and again, that's why I wanted to bring that up, because, you know, again, reading that Hugo could be ready to go, you know, I started to think, oh, will he play Hugo, when I truly believe, and you guys also back me on this, that it should be Colley Woodrow after that last performance, and I don't see a reason why you wouldn't play Colley, but he does seem to like Hugo, and Hugo runs hot and cold. Listen, Hugo does score goals, so, you know, again, it wouldn't shock me, but I personally would rather see Colley Woodrow play, but that's, you know, that's just me. All right, guys, I'm going to go to the predictions. The Cottage Talk Facebook page, we got a few of them. Chris Lewis just sent me a picture, a famous picture, you know, with the hands over, you know, over the face, you know, and basically, you know, not looking too good. So thank you, Chris, for sending me that picture. You can actually see it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Ben Reed wrote, if we play like we did on Saturday, I would fancy us to at least get a point. Otherwise, it would be another difficult away day. Let's be optimistic and say 2-1 to Fulham. McCormick brace. Ben, I like that. The McCormick brace, I like that. Okay. Stephen O'Keefe says, 1-1, reckon we can sneak a draw. Lars Anden says, if we play 5-4-1 with Byrne, Botterill, Hutchinson, 1 point is possible. Colm Bugler wrote, head says 3-1 Watford, heart says 2-0 to Fulham. Paul Howard says 5-0 again. Let's see. Reg Hollis is 7-1 to Hornets. And that's going to do it. All right. All right. Michael, go to you first. Give me your prediction for this match.
Well, I'm hoping we don't revert to type. I think we have to carry on from the other day and give everything. And I'll be really disappointed if we just go back to the way we've been playing. But saying that, whatever we do, I expect to lose 2-0.
2-0. Okay. David?
I'm kind of on the same way, really. I hope I'm wrong again. I'd love to be wrong like I was Saturday. Remember that, Russ? I was wrong on Saturday. Yeah? Well, I was wrong on
Saturday.
Wait a minute.
This is recording. David said he was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, David.
I was wrong. Not about everything, but I was wrong about that one, about the score anyway.
Yeah.
And I want to be wrong tomorrow. So
okay.
I fear that we aren't going to be able to replicate it, and it's going to be a 3-1 to Watford.
Okay. Guys, I'm fearful of this match, and I see why you guys pick Watford. I could see why some of the supporters pick Watford. If I go with my heart, I say 2-1 to Fulham, but I'm going to go with my head. 2-1 to Watford, and a goal, David, by who? Ross McCormack.
Brian Ruiz?
No, Ross McCormack. Of course, Ross McCormack. All right. Come on, it's got to be a goal by Ross McCormack at some point. All right, guys, great show. This is a fun episode. I really enjoyed it. Mike, thank you so much for joining us at the last minute. I really appreciate it, my friend. You were excellent today.
Cheers, Russ. Really enjoyed it. And, hopefully, you know, we will go against Tyke tomorrow and get that win, and we'll breathe a bit more easy. And look forward to Friday, which I think is going to be the big game of the week, to be honest.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you on Friday's match. I think that's a much better opportunity. But it would be nice if they could get something out of this match. And, you know, winning it would be just fantastic. David, as always, great show, my friend. You always put in a great shift. Very good, David.
Thanks. Well, I'd like to apologize for you not having any reason to apologize today. So I'll apologize for that.
Okay. I know I have this thing about me. It's my personality. I do apologize a great deal. So, again, I'm going to apologize for apologizing. Oh, God, I just have to stop. All right,
no,
enough.
I thought it was a very welcome return today of the Narrage. So it was nice to see that.
Yeah, I screwed that up. Good. I screwed that up.
Good. It was good. So let's hope we're all wrong. And obviously, I think I'm back on Friday, am I? And I'll be happy to say on Friday. Oh, no, Thursday, isn't it?
Thursday.
Week. I'll be happy on Thursday to say I'm wrong again. So I really hope I can say that.
I hope you can too, David. All right, let's wrap up this show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can now listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app. So many fans are now listening to it on the TuneIn app. It's a great way to listen to it. It's available at most app stores for your mobile device. I also want to mention, finally, Blog Talk Radio has fixed the Cottage Talk page on blogtalkradio.com. You can now listen back to to former episodes archived there on blogtalkradio.com. You can also listen live on the show right there on the Cottage Talk page. It's blogtalkradio.com/Cottage Talk. It is now up and running, now working again. So I'm glad that we finally got that resolved. All right, guys, let's wrap this up. For David, Holly, and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.
Cheers. Speak to you again, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks. See you, Mike. See you, Russ. Bye-bye.
Bye.